And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
The Evangelical Lutheran Mission Diocese of Finland, the ELMDF, has elected Diocesan Dean Johanna Pajola to serve as its new bishop. The election was announced during the ELMDF's Diocesan Assembly on January the 23rd, 2021. I wish to express my gratitude for the great confidence you have shown in me by giving me such strong support and by electing me for this important and demanding task, said the Reverend Dr. Pajola in a speech after the election. I feel great weakness faced with such a great task and calling, but I know that the matter has been discussed in the congregations and that many prayers and intercessions have been said for the matter, which encourages me to look forward to this. In total, Dr. Pajola received 111 votes, 90.2%, through advance voting, while candidate the Reverend Esko Murto received 12 votes, a total of 95% of potential delegates voted in the election. Dr. Pajola's consecration as bishop is planned for August the 1st at the ELMDF's Mission Diocese Summer Festival in Loma, Finland. He will be the third bishop in the history of Finland's Luther Foundation and the second for the ELMDF itself. Dr. Pajola will succeed Bishop Risto Saramis, who has served as bishop from 2013 to 2021. Matti Väisänen served as the first Finnish bishop of the Mission Province of Sweden and Finland from 2010 until the emergence of the Evangelical Lutheran Mission Diocese of Finland in 2013. Dr. Pajola has served as Diocesan Dean of the ELMDF from 2013 until the present, and as Dean of its supporting trust, Luther Foundation Finland, the LFF, from 2000 to 2001 and 2012 to the present. He previously served as head pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Helsinki and as a visiting scholar at Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary in Ontario, Canada, and he holds a Master of Theology degree from the University of Helsinki, a Master of Sacred Theology degree from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and a Doctorate of Theology from the University of Helsinki. Dean Pajola was ordained in the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Finland's, the ELCF, Diocese of Oulu in 1999 in order to serve the then newly founded Luther Foundation Finland. In 2004, the LFF broke fellowship with the ELCF over doctrinal differences. The ELFF found itself shunned by the ELCF, but the unexpected publicity led to rapid growth in the LFF. Dean Pajola was eventually defrocked by the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England in 2014 after the founding of the Evangelical Lutheran Mission Diocese of Finland. The ELMDF and Dean Johanna Pajola drew international attention in 2020 when Finnish police began investigating them for the 2004 publication of a booklet which defended historic Christian teaching on human sexuality. The booklet, which was written by a Finnish Member of Parliament, was published well before the 2017 legalisation of same-sex marriage in Finland. Dean Pajola was interrogated for 5 hours as part of an ongoing investigation, which has sparked international concern over the state of religious freedom in Finland. In a letter to the Diocesan Assembly, President Matthew Harrison of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod expressed joy at the prospect of an official declaration of fellowship. Your hospitality, service to Christ, and commitment to Scripture and the Lutheran confessions in the face of opposition remain an example and encouragement to me and to our entire church, President Harrison said. It is with special joy and thanksgiving that I write on behalf of the LCMS humbly to extend our hand of fellowship to the Evangelical Lutheran Diocese of Finland. In a letter to President Harrison following the vote, Bishop Saramis expressed joy over the declaration of fellowship between the two churches. The Missouri Synod has been a strong partner for many other confessional churches around the world, he noted. We are deeply thankful for this fellowship, which is, and will certainly continue to be, a blessing for God's people. When Aled Jones decided to record a Christmas album, he was determined it should celebrate every faith, to try to unite all the world's religions after a difficult and challenging year. but now the 40th album of the Walking in the Air singer has become embroiled in a legal battle with the Jehovah's Witnesses, who claim sales should be halted because of the inclusion of one of its unauthorized songs breaches copyright. Lawyers for the church have filed legal papers in New York, accusing the singer and BMG Rights Management of failing to get permission to use Listen, Obey and Be Blessed. They say featuring it on a Christmas album is hypocritical because Jehovah's Witnesses do not celebrate Christmas, and it causes them to be viewed in a significantly negative light by its believers around the world. Listen, Obey and Be Blessed appears on Mr. Jones's album Blessings, which includes uplifting hymns, texts and scriptures set to music from Christian, Jewish, Muslim and Buddhist religions, as well as Catholic and Quaker denominations. The CD and download was described at its release last November as the perfect Christmas gift because it was a labour of love for Mr. Jones, who wanted to show how peace, love and kindness were the core values of all religions. The songs were recorded around the world and include appearances of stars such as Dame Judi Dench, The Priests, Brian Blessed, Sammy Youssef, Susan Boyle and the 93-year-old D-Day veteran Harry Billinge. In the American civil action, lawyers claim Watchtower Bible and Tract Society of Pennsylvania, the governing body for Jehovah's Witnesses, opposed the Welsh singer's use of their song, published originally as part of a songbook with copyright protection officially registered in the US. They claim Mr. Jones and his record label not only infringes their copyrights, but causes them reputational harm. They are seeking preliminary and permanent injunctive relief and damages for willful copyright infringement. The 14-page document adds, in line with the Bible-based teachings and practices of Jehovah's Witnesses Watchtower, does not commercialize its original works of authorship, does now allow its original words to be used in conjunction with other religions or expressions thereof, does not allow its original works of authorship to be used in conjunction with the celebration of Christmas, a holiday that is not observed by Jehovah's Witnesses. The lawyers point out how the record label BMG's artists include artists such as Morrissey, Kylie Minogue, Boy George and David Bowie, and so derive substantial revenue but valued at billions of dollars. They say Watchtower wrote to Mr. Jones's manager warning how use of their song had not been obtained. The lawyers say they believe BMG UK approached the German Rights Society to seek permission to use the music. However, the Jehovah's Witnesses insist that that organisation does not have authority to approve the song's use. A BMG spokesman said, "We are aware of Watchtower's concerns and are optimistic this can be resolved amicably. Blessings is a celebration of music from several faiths. Great music brings everyone together. Causing offence was the last thing on the mind of anyone involved in this project." Mr. Jones declined to comment. A spokesman for the Jehovah's Witnesses said, "Although we cannot comment on the details of this case since it is in litigation, it is naturally of concern to any organisation when their copyrighted material is used without authorisation. This is particularly true of our Christian songs, which are produced for use in our worship and for strictly non-commercial purposes." While it may still feel like we are in the cold, gloomy depths of winter, the days are slowly getting longer, heralding the imminent arrival of spring. Food is set to occupy our minds for the following few months as we take on Lent, while Easter is just around the corner. But how is the fasting season of Lent intrinsically linked to spring, and why do we use the 40 days to test our willpower? Here is everything you need to know about the Christian period, from all the key dates to the best things to give up for Lent. Ash Wednesday, which marks the start of Lent in the Christian calendar, has been observed by Britons for centuries. Its exact date changes every year because it is determined by the dates of Easter, but it is always the day after Shrove Tuesday or Pancake Day, and it always falls in February or March. This year it takes place on February the 17th. In 2016, the Archbishop of Canterbury, the Most Reverend Justin Welby, suggested that Easter should fall on the same date each year. The plan, which would schedule the Christian festival on the same Sunday each year, was welcomed by parents and schools, but angered some traditionalists. At present, Easter falls on the first Sunday, following the first full moon after the vernal equinox. This means it can fall on any Sunday between March the 22nd and April the 25th. Archbishop Welby said that Easter should most likely be fixed for the second or third Sunday of April. The name Ash Wednesday comes from the practice of either marking a cross on the churchgoer's forehead with ash or sprinkling ash on their forehead, which is believed to have been ritualized by Pope Urban II as far back as 1091. Both the Catholic and Methodist churches use the ashes of palm branches blessed at the previous year's Palm Sunday service, while the Church of England say the ashes may be made from the previous year's ashes. As the ash is placed on the churchgoer's forehead, traditionally the words repent and believe in the gospel, or remember that you are dust and to dust you shall return, are said. Sometimes the mark is left on the forehead to show that they carry the sign of the cross into the world. At other services, the ashes are washed off as a sign that the worshipper has been cleansed of their sins. Often the colour purple is used in churches throughout Lent. Associated with mourning, and therefore the suffering of the crucifixion, it can be seen on drapes and altar frontals. The colour is also symbolic of royalty and celebrates the resurrection and sovereignty. As Lent begins on Ash Wednesday, the date of the Christian observance changes every year, determined by the March equinox and the celebration of Easter. This year, the fasting season begins on Wednesday, February the 17th, concluding on Saturday, April the 3rd, the Saturday preceding Easter Sunday. While there are always 46 days between Ash Wednesday and Easter Sunday, the six Sundays are not counted as fast days due to the Christian calendar assigning this particular day of the week for feasts. Some people fast for the whole period of Lent. Some Christians will fast only on Ash Wednesday and Good Friday, the Friday before Easter Sunday. However, many people, even those who do not go to church, choose to give up a particular vice. Here are some of the popular options. Sugar, including chocolate, coffee, meat, fizzy drinks, takeaways, alcohol, smoking and vaping, procrastinating, swearing, buying clothes, Netflix, pub trips, social media, online dating, and gaming. Instead of giving up chocolate, fizzy drinks, or chips, many others use Lent as a period of time to help others. Hundreds of people take part in the Lenten Positive Acts Challenge. Participants perform one positive act for each of the days between Ash Wednesday and Easter Sunday. These positive acts can include calling up someone who is alone, donating to a worthy cause, clearing up after dinner, and letting someone go ahead of you in a supermarket queue. Ash Wednesday marks the first day of Lent, a period of 40 days excluding Sundays, which comes before Easter in the Christian calendar. This year, Easter falls on Sunday, April the 4th. Christians who observe Lent use it as a time for prayer and penance. By observing Lent, Christians are remembering the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, who withdrew into the wilderness and fasted for 40 days. Traditionally, pancakes are eaten on the day before, Ash Wednesday, to use up rich, indulgent foods like eggs and milk before the 40-day fasting season of Lent begins. The English word Lent has no connection to the practice of fasting. It is in fact a shortened version form of the old English word Lenten, meaning spring season. Linked to the old Germanic root word lango, which means long, many believe the word Lent is related to the lengthening of days over the season. In fact, the Anglo-Saxon name for March, the month Lent usually falls in, was Lententid, which means springtide. However, as the fasting season that precedes Easter always takes place in the spring, the word Lent soon became to be linked intrinsically to 40 days of penance. In Ashbourne, Derbyshire, players usually use Ash Wednesday, concluding the annual Royal Shrovetide football match. The two-day event, which kicks off on Shrove Tuesday, pits the Upards against the Downards in an attempt at scoring goals set 3 miles apart in the Peak District town. Royal Shrovetide football has been played in Ashbourne almost every year since the 17th century. This year, however, the game will not be able to go ahead due to the COVID-19 restrictions that are currently in place. In southern Germany, it's traditional for people to wash their wallets in fountains to bring good fortune on Ash Wednesday. It is said that anyone who washes their wallet will never see it empty. In Iceland, children dressed up in costumes on Ash Wednesday and sing in shops in return for sweets and treats. Traditionally, children collected ash into small bags and were then challenged to pin them onto other people's clothing without them noticing. The former Archbishop of Canterbury has had his ban on ministering overturned amid calls by clergy for the church to concentrate their energies on those who are genuinely at fault. In June last year, it emerged that Lord Carey, 85, had his permission to officiate PTO as a priest revoked. A PTO is required for any Church of England priest to preach or minister. At the time, the Church of England said new evidence linking Lord Carey to a review into abuse committed by the late John Smith QC had emerged. The barrister, who had died aged 77 in 2018, was accused of attacking boys whom he had met at a Christian camp during the 70s and 80s. However, 7 months after his PTO was revoked, the Diocese of Oxford released a statement from Lord Carey on Monday saying that the Bishop of Oxford, the Right Reverend Dr. Stephen Croft, had reinstated it because he does not pose a safeguarding risk. Lord Carey's PTO was withdrawn after the Independent Learning Lessons case review into the late John Smith QC referred to information comprising two letters to the National Safeguarding Team, the NST, of the Church of England. The letters gave rise to concerns that when Lord Carey was principal of Trinity College, Bristol, in 1983-84, he had received a report concerning Smith's evil conduct in the early 1980s without disclosing these concerns to the appropriate authorities. At that time, Smith attended the college for a short period of part-time study. An NST core group was set up and concluded that Lord Carey had seen the report. Responding to the revelation that the former Archbishop had had his PTO reinstated, an abuse victim, who spoke on condition of anonymity, said, "Whether George Carey can remember John Smith or not is irrelevant. If he failed to respond appropriately to a report regarding extensive and exceptional abuse, he should not be allowed to administer again." However, members of the clergy, as well as General Synod, have welcomed the update, saying that now church authorities can concentrate their energies on those who are genuinely at fault. The Reverend Janet Fife, co-editor of Letters to a Broken Church, said, "I'm pleased that Lord Carey has at last been given back his PTO. The case against him was weak, and it was always clear that he posed no risk to anyone. Perhaps now the NST will concentrate their energies on those who are genuinely at fault and on supporting survivors of church abuse." David Lamming, a retired barrister and lay member of the General Synod, who has taken a particular interest in safeguarding issues within the Church of England, also welcomed the restoration of Lord Carey's PTO. "In no way could the information about John Smith that George Carey may have received 36 years ago make him a safeguarding risk now in his ministerial role in retirement. He deserves a public apology from the NST, but I note that none is forthcoming." In a statement, Lord Carey, who was Archbishop of Canterbury from 1991 to 2002, said, "Following helpful and friendly discussions with the Bishop of Oxford, I am pleased to say that my PTO has been reinstated." He added that he has no memory at all of John Smith at Trinity College, Bristol. "Let me firmly say that I condemn utterly the crimes of Smith and the damage he did to the lives of young people. I am fully committed to placing those who have survived abuse at the centre of our safe practices, thoughts and prayers, and to acknowledge how dreadful such abuse is and how lifelong the impact of such abuse. Over the past few years, I've spent an immense amount of time focusing intensively on safeguarding through working closely with two inquiries into Peter Ball, including the independent inquiry into child sexual abuse, and through undertaking specialised safeguarding training. This year I've made a report to the NST of a disclosure I received about non-recent clerical sexual abuse. I am strongly of the view that training in safeguarding is a vital tool to overcoming failures to protect children and vulnerable adults. I am very willing to meet with survivors of John Smith if they wish to meet with me." Churches and mosques in Ethiopia are being attacked and their sacred treasures looted in a catastrophic conflict in the northern Tigray region that is causing destruction, loss of life and a surge of refugees to Sudan, according to international experts. They are warning of historical vandalism and cultural cleansing, fearing that religious sites have not been exempt from shelling and that a nation is being robbed of its ancient religious heritage to the distress of Ethiopians and all faiths. There are reports of Christian manuscripts being stolen from churches and monasteries and burned, with some manuscripts as old as the 13th century, and of historic Muslim sites being damaged and looted. They include the building housing the tombs of 12 of Muhammad's companions, beside the El Najashi Mosque at Nagash, north of Wukro, the most important Muslim pilgrim site in East Africa. This is cultural cleansing, or Michael Jervis, a professor of history at the University of Toronto. The government and the Eritreans want to wipe out the Tigrayan culture. They think they're better than the rest of the people in the country. The looting is about destroying and removing the cultural presence of Tigray. We don't know where it's going yet. One of the first reports I had is that manuscripts are being driven south. They're emptying the physical evidence of culture from the province. On 4th of November, Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, who received the Nobel Peace Prize for ending a war with neighbouring Eritrea, ordered a military response to an attack by Tigray People's Liberation Front, the TPLF, forces on a military camp in the region. Both the Ethiopian and Eritrean governments have denied reports that Eritrean forces are in Tigray. The United Nations has warned of mass killings in Tigray as concern has grown for the safety of the refugees. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, said office had received allegations of international humanitarian law and human rights law violations, including artillery strikes on populated areas, the deliberate targeting of civilians, extrajudicial killings, and widespread looting. Christianity arrived in the ancient Aksumite kingdom with its center in today's Tigray in the 4th century. Although Muslims founded their first mosque outside Mecca there in early time of Muhammad, the community of Tigrayan Muslims is today a well-established minority. Tigray is home to thousands of churches and monasteries, with the oldest carved into rock faces. Christian texts written in the classical language Jez are among hundreds of thousands of sacred manuscripts in Ethiopia. President Jervis spoke to The Telegraph about the deplorable situation in Tigray. I know the province well, having worked there occasionally between 1982 and 1993, and annually since 2000. My objective has been to examine archaeological sites and to document Christian antiquities. With a media blackout and local people frightened to talk, verifying reports is difficult, he said. But I've heard that the ancient Muslim tomb at Nagash has been badly damaged, and that the Emmanuel Church, which has sat on the top of a pinnacle for centuries, has been damaged through shelling. Around 800 Jez manuscripts were looted from the Shire region. The list goes on. A Belgian team managed to reach the town of Shire, where they videotaped a tank covered with looted goods. Dr. Wolbert Schmidt, a German academic who has long worked on historical sites in Tigray, said that attacks and battles around, at and nearby such sites show a very great danger for them. Referring to unverified reports of shootings around the most ancient and sacred church of Ethiopian Christianity, Mariam Thun, in Aksum, which is said to hold the Ark of the Covenant, and the attack on the tomb of Nagash, he spoke of his shock that two of the most sacred sites for both Christians and Muslims have been targeted, perhaps from a desire to attack places important for the local identity. He added that breaking the traditional rule of sacred places being absolute sanctuaries is a tragedy, both an already deeply shocked local population and the world's heritage. Professor Jervis said, I've not heard more than rumours about the looting of the Ark from Maresim Tzion, but it's great that up to 750 people died defending it. It is conceivable that the attackers didn't stop there. The International Tigrayan Muslims Association expressed outrage over the attack on the El Najashi Mosque. Professor Jervis called for an intervention by whichever international power can pressure the Ethiopian government to lay off its onslaught, he added. To date, no one seems able or ready to step forward and call foul. If world powers stay aloof, it seems to suggest that they agree with what's going on. In an open letter of 13th of January, academics from Hamburg University voiced alarm, calling for the warring parties to abstain from attacking the cultural heritage and to respect the integrity of the places, both religious and secular. Ethiopia's UK embassy said it was committed to protecting its cultural heritage and blamed the TPLF for using cultural sites as shields with the intent of causing them damage. A spokesperson said, "The facts on the ground are entirely detached from the situation painted therein by TPLF affiliates and those fooled by their campaign of misinformation. Instead, evidence shows that TPLF forces, in their fight to overthrow the government of Ethiopia, used ancient churches and mosques as shields, hiding places, and as depots to store their military supplies. This is being done with the ill intent of causing destruction to these sites, in a desperate move to receive the attention of the international community. Ethiopia, a country of ancient civilizations, has the most UNESCO World Heritage Sites in Africa and is best known for cultural and religious tolerance. The government of Ethiopia is fully aware of the significance of the country's ancient religious sites and remains fully committed for their protection," they said. And finally, Pastor Jamie decided to do his first ever parachute jump for charity. The instructor told him, "First, you pull the big cord. If it doesn't work, you pull the little cord. There'll be a red bus waiting for you when you land." Pastor Jamie jumped out of the plane. When he pulled the big cord, nothing happened. So he pulled the little cord. Still nothing happened. "Oh, that's great," he muttered. "Now suppose the red bus won't be there either."
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.